Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
What, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago after every Bulls game. My co-host Jordan Malley and I are still battling through our offseason schedules that are conflicting seemingly every day. So I thought I would hop on and start off our mailbag episode by taking some of your emails and your text messages. And hopefully later today, Jordan can hop on and field some of your voicemails. And we'll put these together and do a part one and part two mailbag episode for you guys. Hopefully Jordan and I can get together either Thursday or Friday this week to have at least one episode with both of us on the mics together. But in the meantime, keep those comments and questions coming, all things Bulls related, to that text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Bulls _Peck. Jordan's at Jordan C. Malley. We are at Lock On Bulls. You can also hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And if you don't have a U.S. number or for whatever reason can't send us some text, you can also just send us a good old-fashioned email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com. So, with that, let us dive right in to some of your thoughts in our inbox over the last week or so. Let's start things off with a couple of our international listeners. This one comes to us from Stephen Pierce. Shout out from Down Under. Hey guys, firstly, did I mention about why I wanted Patty Mills for the Bulls? Damn, he torched us. He torched Team USA in the fourth quarter. That is true. I've always been high on Patty Mills. I know Jordan has too. He would be a great role player and veteran for this Bulls team right now. I don't see Greg Popovich letting Patty Mills go anytime soon. Although I'm sure Pop did enjoy watching Patty Mills, one of his favorite players, hand it to his Team USA as the Bulls were getting as the Team USA was getting ready in that exhibition game, which they did lose to Australia. So Steven has a question for us. Who has the size to defend the big men from teams like the Nuggets with Nikola Jokic and the Sixers with Joel Embiid and the Lakers with Anthony Davis? I think you'll say Wendell Carter, but I think he will struggle against bigger, less mobile big men. He didn't do so well against bigger players last season, whereas the bigger Lopez did manage better. What do you think is the strategy here? Thad Young, Luke Kornet, cheers, Steve. Thanks for checking in, Steve. A good question, and I think you might be selling Wendell a little short. I know we're a little worried about the fact that he has not had a fully healthy offseason, having had surgery on that core muscle issue he was having. So maybe he hasn't had enough or as much time to develop his game in the offseason as we would like to see a big jump from him from year one to year two. But I do think we still saw at times last season, when healthy, the enormous upside Wendell has to be an absolute stud on the defensive end. Did he get into some early foul trouble in some games because he was a rookie making rookie-type mistakes? Yes, but that's to be expected. And did he get dominated by some of the bigger, stronger, you know, centers and power forwards that he faced in his rookie year? Yeah. But again, to be expected. I don't think that Luke Kornet would do a whole lot better. He is a pretty solid shot blocker, but I don't think he has nearly the defensive versatility that Wendell Carter has. Thad Young might be an option that Jim Boylan goes to often to try and slow down some of the more dominant bigs in the league, because for a guy his size, Thad Young has always been a very competent defender. And if you go back and watch some of the Pacers-Sixers games from last season, Thad Young is one of the people most well-equipped to defend and bother and slow down Joel Embiid. Embiid did not play that well when he was guarded by Thad Young. And, gee, I wonder if that had something to do with the Bulls targeting Thad Young. Methinks, yes. Thanks for checking in, Steve. Another international listener. This is Jerry. Hey, guys. Love the show. I'm Jerry from Luxembourg. We have our own language, Luxembourgish. Most of the people here learn German, French, and English in school. I'm a Bulls fan, have been since the Jordan era for obvious reasons. I loved seeing Rose play at full capacity and had the chance to watch the Bulls play live in LA at the Staples Center on January 30th, 2015, which was an overtime game. Wow, that must have been fun. Long story short, just wanted to know if you agree that Wendell has the biggest potential of the current squad. I think he could do it all and can be an all-star at some point. Obviously, he needs to stay healthy. I hope Boylan can use him the right way. Thanks for keeping the show going in the offseason. Peace, Jerry. Jerry from Luxembourg checking in on that email. Appreciate it. So here we are, another Wendell item of conversation. Jerry may be a little bit higher than our friend Steve from Australia. I do think that Wendell has all-star potential. I don't think it's crazy for Jerry to suggest that he has the highest potential ceiling among all Bulls players on the roster right now. Some would say that maybe Markkanen or LaVine is the more de facto logical answer, but there are a lot of people, and not just here in Chicago, but NBA analysts from, you know, every corner, saying that Wendell secretly is this team's biggest high-ceiling weapon. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I can see the argument to be made for that. It's all about just how quickly and how well-rounded he can develop the offensive side of his game. Because I think he is going to turn into a defensive stud and a perennial all-NBA defensive team kind of candidate. Now, in order to achieve that perennial all-star vote-getting kind of guy, he also needs to develop the offensive end of his game. As far as how Jim Boylan chooses to use him, I think at times last season that did hinder Wendell's game. Maybe some of it was Wendell also himself not trying to do too much as a rookie. We certainly saw him shy away from offensive opportunities at times, and defense has sagged off of him because of it. Now, we know that the Bulls brought in Roy Rogers as a new assistant coach added to Boylan's staff this offseason, along with Chris Fleming. Chris Fleming got a lot of credit for doing what he did with the Brooklyn Nets, advancing their offense with a lot of emphasis on players moving without the ball, solid spacing, and quality three-point shots. Roy Rogers has gotten a lot of credit for developing big men over the course of his NBA coaching career, most recently and most notably Clint Capela, who has really turned into a young rising star for the Houston Rockets, a very important piece on a very good team. So my hope is that Roy Rogers and Chris Fleming are there to help Jim Boylan figure out the best ways to use Wendell Carter in this Bulls offense. Because I don't think he's going to be a high usage player on the offensive end this season. He might be a higher usage player than he was his rookie year, but I still think a majority of the usage is going to come from the trio of Markkanen, LaVine, and Otto Porter Jr. It's just about Wendell and the Bulls collectively working together to figure out the best opportunities for him to take advantage of what they see from their opponent's defense on a nightly basis. We didn't see a whole lot of Wendell working on the block last year, and he didn't look all that comfortable when he was doing it. And we also didn't see him take that many shots from behind the three-point line, which we did see him do sporadically, but knocking them down at a solid rate in his one season at Duke. So can all of those parts of his offensive game take a step forward, and will Rogers and Fleming and Boylan all work together to figure out how best to do that with Wendell? If all of that happens this year, you could see Wendell take a big jump, and that's why I don't think it is crazy to suggest that if he develops this season and the season after, remember, he's still very young. He played his rookie year as a teenager. yes, that ceiling is there for Wendell. But again, it will take time because coming into his second season, he's still a very wet behind the ears 20-year-old. Very, very young. A long way to go, but I'm hoping that we see a big jump from Wendell in year two. Thanks for checking in, Jerry. All right, let's get to some text messages. This one comes to us from Eric in Grant Park, Illinois. Parentheses, not Grant Park in Chicago. Wouldn't that be cool if you just lived in Grant Park? How could you feel about the Bulls taking a chance on J.R. Smith? Eric wants to know. Obviously, this would be after waiving Antonio Blakeney and trading Dunn, but Smith could be a spark off the bench and give you depth at the wing. Thanks for the question, Eric. The part about Eric's proposal here that I do agree with is that the Bulls could use some more depth at the wing. It's perhaps one thing that they glossed over or didn't address this offseason that I wish they had. And some people are still hoping that a move can be made to address the wing at the depth position behind Otto Porter Jr. because people don't really have a whole lot of faith in the ability of Denzel Valentine to stay healthy and stay on the court. And also don't have a whole lot of faith in Chandler Hutchison after seeing small spurts of him in his rookie season. And he is also coming into the season after dealing with a significant injury last year. So that's the concern with the wing spot, and I agree with Eric that the Bulls should, if they find a way to do it, still address the depth behind Otto. That's where my level of agreement with Eric stops. J.R. Smith has proven at times throughout his NBA career, which has been a long, fairly successful NBA career, going all the way back to 2004-2005 when he was a 19-year-old rookie, to be a complementary role player on teams that are varying levels of good and varying levels of competitive. Has always been a fairly confident three-point shooter. He's 37.3% from downtown over the span of his entire career. And he was a very important piece of that Cleveland Cavaliers team in LeBron's second stint, including winning that title in 2016. J.R. Smith started and played in and started 77 games that season, shooting 40% from downtown on 6.6 attempts per game. Averaged 12.4 points per game. Important piece. Solid role player. Could he hypothetically bring some of that off the bench for the Bulls? I suppose. But he's getting a little older. He's 33 going on 34. And last season, he played just 11 games for the now-defunct sans LeBron Cleveland Cavaliers. And in those just 11 games, he shot only 30.8% from downtown. And then there's all the J.R. Smith is a head case stuff. The bowl of soup throwing gate and everything else. And the maybe costing the Cavs game one of the NBA Finals when LeBron had an otherworldly performance and made that boneheaded play where instead of putting the ball back up when he grabbed an offensive rebound, dribbled it out towards middle court because he thought they were ahead when they in fact were not. Now, just a couple of recent incidences of J.R. Smith maybe not being the brightest, you know, the brightest marble, the sharpest tool in the shed, whatever idiom you want to use. But those are two recent examples because they are recent examples that made headlines, and there are plenty more that precede it. As the Bulls went through such turbulence last season with the Boylan takeover and the near player mutiny and all of the stuff where they were getting national headlines for the wrong reasons. And we were just discussing on a recent Bulls Outsiders podcast about this poll about teams that were going to be the, you know, teams with turmoil this upcoming season. The Bulls were not at the top of the list of vote getters, but they were still among those receiving votes. And we don't want that to happen. We want the Bulls to be a confident young group that are all on the same page and have no internal issues and a happy locker room where everybody is there for each other and there's no issues.
I'm not saying that it's a guarantee or a certainty that J.R. Smith being added to your locker room creates problems that were not previously there, but it certainly opens that window. It certainly presents opportunities for turmoil and locker room turbulence where previously there weren't any. And couple that with the fact that his play has declined in the last couple of seasons. I mean, he just turned down, I believe it was a $1.6 or $1.8 million offer to go play in China, like as recently as last week, and has still not found himself an NBA roster. There's a reason that J.R. Smith has not found an NBA roster. And maybe I shouldn't say there is a reason. I should say there are reasons. So might he provide some solid shooting off the bench at the wing spot where the Bulls are short? Yes. But for a variety of reasons, I'd say if at all possible, the Bulls should look elsewhere before calling up J.R. Smith. But thanks for the question, Eric. All right, this next text comes to us from Robert in Las Vegas. Hey guys, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the personal matchups you'd like to see this year? I feel like Dunn and Young rematch may result in punches being thrown this time around. Thanks for checking in, Robert. I assume he's talking about Chris Dunn and Trey Young, who got into it and things got a little chippy, a little scrappy when the Bulls and Hawks played each other last season. This is an interesting question. As far as the Bulls and what personal matchups I'm interested in seeing, I was talking earlier about the, you know, maybe some of the doubters in Wendell and his abilities to defend the best bigs in the league, and another listener who really is looking at Wendell's ceiling and really excited for this season and what Wendell might show us. So to that end, yeah, I really can't wait to see Wendell on both ends of the floor, but primarily what he can do taking another step towards being one of the league's best defenders in the front court. Because we did see him shine in some moments. And, of course, who could forget his, you know, his coming out party game, I think, you could probably call it that, against the Denver Nuggets, in which, yeah, he did have to guard Nikola Jokic, who was at the time one of the fastest rising stars in the league and went on to be a MVP vote getter last season. And Jokic had a big game, and the Nuggets ended up winning in very dramatic fashion. But the Bulls, who were a losing young team at the time, were in it and looking good, and Wendell looked great and even got some respect from Jokic at the end of the game. We also saw Wendell take some licks from Al Horford, and we didn't really get to see ever, because either of them was injured and sitting out, the Wendell Embiid action as much as we would have liked to last season. So I can't wait to see Wendell and Embiid go at it this season. And then, speaking of the Sixers, once again on a new team, but another personal matchup I can't wait to see this time around again is Zach LaVine and Jimmy Butler going toe-to-toe. Hopefully in a game that is close in the fourth quarter and they are, you know, exchanging buckets, going at each other. Because we saw LaVine and Jimmy dueling when Jimmy had just been traded to Minnesota and Zach had just come back after nursing the ACL in his first season with the Bulls. It was a game that Jordan and I went to at the United Center with one of our listeners, Robert, and it was really exciting. It was really entertaining. Even though the Bulls were supposed to be tanking, everybody at the UC was loving the LaVine versus Jimmy show, and the Bulls came out on top. And then again, last season, LaVine had one of his monster games against the Sixers and Jimmy Butler. So now that Jimmy Butler has moved on to Miami, and especially knowing that the rivalry's kind of been dormant since the Heatles broke up, but has been the most recent, you know, I guess you could say that LeBron's Cavs Part 2 are the most recent Bulls rivalry, but it never really had quite the same luster as the Heatles, who were just so hated here in Chicago, and for good reason. Now that Jimmy, the former Bull, has gone down to Miami to be Pat Riley's new BFFs, to go continue being BFFs with our old pal Dwayne Wade. I could really see that Bulls-Heat rivalry reemerging this season. And Jordan and I feel like we talked about recently this offseason how it's kind of a downer and it makes the season less exciting when the Bulls don't have a rival. And guess what? You kind of need to be worth half a penny to have a rival. If you win 22 games and lose 60, nobody is considering you to be their rival. That doesn't ever work. But if the Bulls take a step, and especially say the Bulls and Heat have a game, one of the many games that they play, because, you know, two Eastern Conference teams, they'll play each other four times, they might have themselves a game. I don't have the schedule in front of me right now, but say that there's a Bulls-Heat game somewhere in March, towards the end of the season, and the Bulls and the Heat are both teams sniffing around the 7th and 8th seeds in the East, and you got a LaVine versus Jimmy Butler duel. How awesome would that be? How awesome would that be? I would love to see that happen. As for Dunn and Trae Young, who knows? I mean, we might be talking about Dunn and Trae Young continuing their little personal rivalry and their beef with Chris Dunn on a new team not too long from now. You know, we all know that Chris Dunn is a guy who has a chip on his shoulder. We all know that he's a guy who feels like maybe he hasn't been given the, you know, the greatest luck since coming to the Bulls with all the various injuries keeping him off the court. And maybe he feels in some ways he's been wronged by the way that the Chicago media is now already treating him as an afterthought and a wasted part of the Jimmy Butler trade. And his teammates and coaches also just talk about Chris Dunn being a pretty fiery guy. So whatever it was that Trae Young was doing that was making Chris Dunn a little upset and vice versa, we'll see if that continues on into this season. But it's not at the top of my list of personal matchups that I want to watch. All right, one more text, and then I'm going to get out of here and leave the rest of these for Jordan. This one comes to us from one of our regular listeners, Cole, from the 217. Hey, guys, I was always a fan of Deron Williams when he played for U of I and at the beginning of his NBA career. I had high hopes. Anyway, I'm not 100% sure why, but can you catch me up on why the Bulls didn't have a draft pick in 2005, considering we could have got Deron Williams or CP3? Why didn't we try and go for them? I would have. Why didn't we have a pick? I'm not quite sure why. Thanks for checking it in, Cole. Thanks for the question. That's a simple one. The Bulls didn't have a pick in 2005 because they used it as part of a package to send to the Phoenix Suns to get the 7th pick in the previous draft in 2004, which they, of course, used to take none other than Luol Deng, which, when you think about some of the Bulls' recent draft night trades, some people are still on the fence about whether trading Jimmy was the right call, but I think most people would agree now because of Lowry and Zach that we got a pretty good return for it. Of course, the LaMarcus Aldridge trade was just panned and is still a nightmare for Bulls fans to remember. The Doug McDermott trade up, giving up on the rights to draft Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic, another one in recent memory that stings Bulls fans. But the draft night trade to get Luol Deng and pair him with Ben Gordon, who they took third overall, the 2004 draft, the Bulls absolutely destroyed. And that was very early in the John Paxson regime. I mean, Ben Gordon won Sixth Man of the Year as a rookie. Probably should have been Rookie of the Year as well. Okafor got it. I mean, to me, it's still ridiculous that Ben Gordon didn't also win Rookie of the Year. How do you win Sixth Man and not Rookie of the Year? So the Bulls buy the 7th pick from the Suns, send them their first-round pick in 2005, and then they also get Deng. And, of course, we all know how important Luol Deng became to the Bulls. First, as a member of the Baby Bulls team that had some fun moments, including knocking off the defending champion Heat in the playoffs the following year, after Miami had won with a young Wade and an aging Shaq. And the veteran leader and glue guy that Tom Thibodeau relied on constantly, night in, night out, 40-plus minutes a night for the second coming of the Baby Bulls that featured a young MVP Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Kyle Korver, and that whole crew. So is it a bummer that the Bulls missed out on some of these potential adds in the 2005 draft class, as Cole mentioned, like Deron Williams, who is, of course, a pretty popular guy here in Chicago because of his success at U of I and CP3? Yeah, sure. But would I go back in time and change any of what happened and give up Luol Deng to have a draft pick in 2005? Absolutely not. And it continued to work out in the Bulls' favor, but because Ben Gordon and Luol Deng and those Baby Bulls that also had a young, strapping stud point guard by the name of Kirk Heinrich did so well that season, the Bulls' draft pick fell all the way to number 21, which is a lot less value than I think the Suns thought they were getting when they gave the Bulls that seventh pick the year prior to draft Luol Deng. So that's what happened there. Thanks, as always, Cole, for listening. All right, that's it. I got to get out of here. As I said, hopefully later today, Jordan can jump into the mailbag and field some of your guys' voicemails that I didn't get to, and we will put these together for a part one, part two kind of mailbag. And then hopefully Jordan and I can get on the mics together later in the week. Again, we appreciate you bearing with us in these doldrum off-season months where not only has there been not a whole lot to talk about, but Jordan and I's schedules have been really up against one another over the past month or so. And we really appreciate you guys being patient with us as we work through that. And hope to get that squared away by the time the Bulls are playing meaningful basketball again in a month or so. So until next time, Matt Peck saying thanks as always for listening, Bulls Nation. Love you, appreciate you. Shout out to all of those listeners all over the world. We took questions and comments from Australia, from Luxembourg, from Vegas, and of course, in and around our beloved Chicago today. I love just how many different places there are repping our beloved Bulls. It's awesome, and I appreciate all of you guys. So does Jordan. Hit us up on that text voicemail line, 331-979-1369, or hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Bulls_Peck. He's at Jordan C. Malley. We are at Locked On Bulls. You can also email us, lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Until next time, peace.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com. Hey.